Welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. I'm Joseph G. of Monotonous.net and Doraville.org. And with me today, we'll start with our panel. To my right,
Catherine Smith from Georgia for Democracy and Blog for Democracy.
This is a Decatur guy from Atlanta Public Affairs who's not in the top 20 and each pundit who's number one, so go figure.
Randy Lewis from GeorgiaPoliticalDigest.com.
And Drift Drift from Drifting Through the Grift.
Well, we're here today to talk about Georgia politics, and first off, I wanted to talk about the 10th district race, which is was a subject of much debate last time, and the results have come back. The Democrats did not get into the runoff, and it wasn't even close. And Drift Drift, I just wanted to come to you and kind of get some initial thoughts on the whole thing.
Well, I mean, Marlow came within a couple of hundred votes getting in the runoff, but I think the shocking number was the total percentage of Democrat votes in the district. I mean, it's no secret that the district is very Republican. Norwood won 65-35 in the last election, but between Marlow and Freeman and Pascal, they couldn't even pull 28%. So if I was the Democratic Party in Georgia, I'd find that a little disturbing.
Yeah, and if they're going to pull something off, their chance to do it was in a primary set up like that. That's one chance they had to demonstrate that they could organize enough folks with a 7% turnout to at least get one guy in the runoff. Not being able to do that, that's just another indicator of how much in trouble the Democratic Party is here in Georgia.
Do you think some of it's just that the 10th district is so gerrymandered to favor Republicans that maybe there's no way they could have gotten past that?
No doubt about it. It is the two Republicans got over 70% of the vote. That are in the runoff. But with only a 7% turnout, it gets very easy to manipulate that vote for the Democrats in a primary like that. So they weren't even able to do that. And, actually, Marlow was a pretty attractive candidate. I mean, this was a guy who should have scored some really good numbers. And if the party had been able to build around him, they should have at least gotten him in the runoff. Now, he almost certainly would lose in the general, but he should have been in the runoff if they were organized.
So I'm guessing all the new media stuff really didn't have any impact whatsoever on this race. Didn't get people out to the polls.
I would say no. This is actually something Wilson Smith and I talk about quite frequently. And without disparaging my rural roots too much, one of the things you got to realize is there's still a lot of people in these areas that either don't have an internet connection, or if they do, they're still on dial-up. And this stuff is very easy to produce, but it's very difficult to deliver to the audience that you need. And I would just add one thing on to what Randy said. It is disappointing for the Democrats in that district, but they were fighting upstream here. I mean, you're talking about a very pro-Republican, as you said, gerrymandered district. There's pretty much Athens and everybody else. And then, Charlie Norwood's machine, Whitehead was basically given the keys to it. And the other thing about a special election is that a special election is all about get out the vote. It's about getting people to the polls that are going to vote for your guy. And if you got the keys to a 12-year-old machine, that's going to be pretty easy to do.
Also, one additional note on that, and Richter, if you were right to point this out, you have two neighborhoods, really, the suburban area of Augusta, which, of course, was Whitehead. You have the suburban area of Athens, which, of course, was Brown. The rest of that district is very I mean, just to give you an idea, AARP picked two communities to hold debates in that they thought would be communities where they would have a good draw. One of them was Cornelia, Georgia. I mean, that's how rural that district is. So
they got outlet malls there.
Yeah. Outlet malls. With no Wi-Fi.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's a tough district for having electronic message.
I think the lesson that we learned from this is that traditional, old-fashioned, get-out-the-vote strategies are really the best.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that is our lesson. And in addition, I think that the party, the Democratic Party, focused a lot on Athens, which is understandable. It's where they feel comfortable, where there's a lot of friendly faces, but we have to expand beyond that to, you know, get those rural votes, because I think they're out there. I just think that they either weren't inspired to vote, didn't, no one contacted them, or they just didn't see any difference.
And their effort in Athens may have turned out the brown vote.
I don't know. I don't know.
By creating a higher level of awareness in that
district. Obviously a defeat for the Democrats, but is it really more than... You know, it's a special election in a rural Republican district. Yes, they should have gotten more than 28%, but is it something that we can't recover from because we lost? You know, it's in the grand scheme of things, people will forget this next week.
And it's a Republican district and will be for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think the potential problem there is if these things start piling on top of each other. And you're right, it is a special election, but you're going into a... election for Senate next year, where Saxby Chambliss, as vulnerable as he is, you know, I don't really see a strong candidate coming out from Democrats. So if you lose that one, then you got 2010 with Casey Cagle being a prohibitive favorite. And suddenly, if you got like 6 to 8 years of just defeat piling on defeat and piling on defeat, something at some point's got to reverse the tide.
Well, the other big thing that that everyone, I think, in Georgia is waiting on right now is to find out whether or not we're going to have a special session. I've heard all kinds of different reasons proposed for having a special session. What I'm kind of wondering is what's the real motivation here? And I don't know, Catherine, do you have any insight into what's going on?
I don't really know. The only thing I heard was that some people are concerned that if we have a special session, then it's all going to open up the whole budget process again, but I haven't really honestly been paying that close attention.
Well, the hot conspiracy theory is that the Democrats at this point would practically agree to any reason to have a special session, because a special session would, although I don't know, now it's July 1st tomorrow, this may not be true anymore, but if prior to this, a special session would have caused the vetoes to be instantly transmitted. They'd have to revisit the budget. And if the Democrats can get another 5 weeks of the Republicans looking like maniacs, they're probably going to be pretty happy.
Well, actually, the Democrats are in luck, because I think they've got another 7 or 8 months of the Republicans looking like
maniacs. Yeah, that's probably true.
The bad blood between Glenn Richardson and the governor is continuing to fester. Yes, and if the legislature were to reconvene, they would have to take up every one of those vetoes in that special session. It won't keep until next year. So it's not a framework for doing that. That's one. Two, special sessions really have to be simple. Legislatures across the country, you know, when a governor calls a special session, which in this case the governor wouldn't, so the Senate and the House leadership would have to agree to call one, which of course the Senate won't because they're with the governor. But if they were to do that, really what you have to do with the members is have it down to a level like this. This is the ball. You're holding the bat. Here's how this is going to work. It has to be that simple. And by bringing all of those bills in that would need to, that just blows that out of the water. So no way there's going to be a special session. It's too much of a disaster zone for everybody involved. And the Democrats would probably love it because the Republicans would look really bad. But the reality is legislatively, the Republicans are managing to look really bad without a special session.
There are all these different things that are being thrown out there. Most recently, I think it was the special session to address Gennaro Wilson's specific case. Those are just excuses then to have it and, score some political points on different sides.
Exactly. Yeah.
In my opinion, the less those guys are in doing anything up there, the better.
Yeah. For them.
So, I hope they don't go to a special session, because this gives them more opportunity to create mischief.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a party thing. I would say that if the Democrats were in power.
Back in the 1870s, the New York State Supreme Court ruled in one of their rulings that no man's life, liberty, or property is safe when the legislature is in session. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're a liberal or a Democrat. A liberal Democrat or a conservative Republican, that rule is hard and fast for everybody.
Not me.
Well, I want to come back. We briefly touched on Gennaro Wilson. we've had some side conversations about this. And Randy, I just want you to give your take on the Gennaro Wilson case.
I think I'm the only person who thinks he's getting his just rewards. Is that in the panel here? Is that correct?
Pretty much.
Yeah. My argument on this was, if this were a two teenage kids who went too far on a date, yeah, this is probably comes under the what they call the Romeo and Juliet change in the statute. This was really six guys taking two girls, age 15 and 17, to a motel room, supplying them with drugs and alcohol, and then taking turns on the girls. And that doesn't fit any stretched definition of the Romeo and Juliet statute. This really was a criminal rape occurring.
Okay, and let me finish.
And I know that Gennaro was acquitted of the rape charge, but one of the things I've learned in my life is that justice is a very funny thing. And it manages to get served no matter what. So he got pinched on the aggravated assault charge on the 15-year-old. He got hit with a 10-year sentence. And you know what? That kind of makes up for him getting away on the rape charge. So, and in fact, it wasn't just the prosecutor in Douglas County who said that it was a rape. The appeals court of Georgia, when they looked at the case, said that the woman, who, by the way, has never recanted that she was raped, was in fact semi-conscious from the drugs and alcohol. Anytime you have a sex with somebody who is semi-conscious, you are guilty of rape.
Okay, but
so I think he kind of got what he deserved, and everybody who's sort of whining and crying about it, they want to play the law out, but justice sometimes is not the law. Sometimes justice is just justice.
Okay, well first let's go back and get some facts straight about this. First of all, the appeals court did say that she was semi-conscious, yet they did not do anything about the fact that the jury acquitted him. He was acquitted of the rape charge, yeah. And that seems to be ignored in most of the stories going around here. Secondly, the 15-year-old, there's no evidence that she either drank any alcohol or took any drugs. The 17-year-old, there was evidence she had drink and drugs prior to going there and maybe afterwards. But it is not the image that is being portrayed of Gennaro Wilson was handing out rupees like they were lollipops. And the final thing I would say about this is maybe it's justice in your mind, Randy, but you know, a few years ago when kids in Rockdale County were having orgies and passing syphilis around like it was lollipops, we weren't throwing their butts in jail for 10 years. And they were a much more imminent danger to society than Gennaro Wilson has ever been.
I would be fine if that situation had resulted in arrest and prosecutions as well.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I want to be a contractor. Because if we're going to start arresting teenagers for being stupid and throwing their butts in jail for 10 years for being stupid, I want to have a construction company that's going to build all the prisons that we're going to have to build because we are going to need thousands.
I think really the difference, what we have here, you and I actually have a very thin line of disagreement on this. Do you think that
mine's factual.
Do you think that it was still on the side of the line of teenage indiscretion?
That's what the jury found.
And except for the aggravated assault.
Which was based on a bad law, which the legislature changed less than a year later.
But he still committed the rape, even if he was.
Okay, first of all, it was not rape. Let's stop using that word.
Okay. Let me cut in here. I think that Randy, I hate to use you as an example, but to continue to call something that he was acquitted of, to say that he did that he raped, I mean, the jury clearly had a choice under the same law that's present today.
Oh.
Did he rape that girl? They said no. And for you to sit up here and to say that he did without being on that jury, I mean, I think that's unconscionable.
And it's even worse for Eric Johnson, one of the most powerful men in the state of Georgia, to sit on the floor of the People's House of the Senate and call it a rape. And when a reporter calls him on to point out that it was acquittal, he still insists it was rape in his mind.
The jury made their decision, and I, like everybody else, you have to respect the jury when they make the decision, but I'm still able, as is everyone, to look at the evidence and make our own decisions and judgments. And
yeah,
my judgment is that if the girl was semi-conscious, then it was a rape.
I think in the court of a public opinion, that might be true, but
yeah.
not in the courts and in the law.
Oh, no,
they
no.
changed the law.
I agree with you.
they changed the law. They made it 12 months instead of 10 years. And that was the crime that he was convicted of. And so for us to go back and say, well, that's not really the issue. The issue was he was convicted of a crime that at the time he was convicted, it was punishable for 10 years. Now it's punishable for 12 months. Should he get some leniency because the law was changed, but it didn't make it retroactive?
Absolutely.
And I think absolutely he should, and I can't imagine having an opinion otherwise.
Well, two final points here. One, I do appreciate everyone wanting to make sure that there's full justice for Gennaro Wilson on this, because that's a real issue, and it's something I'm concerned about. But I also want to make sure that everybody remembers that there has to be justice for those two girls who were in that room that night, one of whom has never recanted that she was raped. And that's something we all have to keep in mind. The second issue is, and this is where I think the more interesting thing is, and it's not what we're debating, is that what's been happening over the last two or three weeks on this is that the issue has been divided up, where you're seeing social conservatives and Republicans on the Gennaro got what he deserved. You're seeing social liberals and Democrats line up on the other side. And what you're seeing is the potential here for, in the next election, Gennaro Wilson to be a wedge issue and become sort of an iconic face of the Democratic Party.
Now, and see, here's why I disagree with you, Randy, because I think the people of Georgia are smarter than that. And I think that the choice was crystallized when Eric Johnson got up and made that lie-lace speech on the floor of the Senate. Eric Johnson is supposed to be a leader in this state and a leader in his party. And he had three choices that day. He could help Emanuel Jones craft the legislation so that, you know, it was as narrow as possible, it was still going to have judicial review, and let it go through. And that would actually have been a popular decision. Like 70% of the people of Georgia think this is injustice. He could have chosen a second one. He could have said, my political philosophy is for legislative restraint. This is only a can of worms. We can't do it for that reason. He chose a third way, which is the way that today, I'm sorry to say, you are continuing to some degree, which is to start to perpetuate a myth of this child as some sort of monster that if we let him go, he is going to go out and hurt children again, and that he hurt children today, and that he's going to rape. That word comes up again and again and again, and the fact of the matter is he was acquitted of that rape that day,
right.
And D.A. McDade and Eric Johnson are now trying to try this in the court of the public opinion by appealing to the most visceral emotions possible, and I think the people of Georgia are smart enough to suss that out.
Yeah, and the other issue that sticks with me is that four of the other five guys who were there that night are still in jail. Why is Gennaro Wilson being the one that's like that?
Well, he was unwilling
because he wasn't dragged into a room.
He rolled the dice.
He rolled the dice because he wasn't dragged into the room and told he might get 30 years, so he copped to a plea. He's also the only one that doesn't have priors, or one of two that doesn't have
That's
priors.
Right.
Something else that is conveniently left out in all of these.
That's right. Yeah, I think of the six guys in the room, there were a total of 40 arrests among them.
Yes, which D.A. McDade is quick to roll out in
That's
every
right.
argument.
Yeah, but it wasn't him.
But you know what? One of the most basic principles of our judicial system is we do not do guilt by association, and we do not try a jury. And Gennaro Wilson had nothing. And this is the only
crime.
Nothing crime. And in fact, it was the complete opposite. And I want D.A. McDade and Eric Johnson to, you know, come to my face and explain to me that Gennaro Wilson is a threat to society.
It's the welfare system. This entire situation.
No, that's that
and,
idiot John
you know,
Douglas.
And if it had been John Douglas's daughter, he would have shot the guy.
Oh yeah, that.
I don't know what he was talking about. What would he have done?
This thing is going to play out for another year. Gennaro is not going to get before the Supreme Court. I think before November.
Oh yeah, he's going to stay in jail for quite some time.
So this is going to play out into the election year. It's going to be a very interesting item.
Yeah, and I really think the people of Georgia understand the issues enough to understand exactly what's going on here.
Well, what's going on with the state?
Super Baker.
Yeah, Super Baker. In terms of actually, rather than just kind of letting this whole process die down, like go away, instead he's completely refusing to let Gennaro out. He said no.
The Attorney General is acting as if he has absolutely no discretion as to what cases he can appeal. You know, it's ridiculous. He does it every day on the job. To say, oh, I've got to follow the letter of the law, that's ridiculous. He chooses what cases to prosecute, which cases to appeal, which cases to go for the jugular on. He uses discretion every day. For him to stand up there and say, I'm just going to follow the law, is ridiculous. He should be ashamed.
And I agree with you to your point. What I really think he's saying is, I'm going to follow the letter of the law. And the reason I'm doing that is, this should not be settled at the state level. You guys go back to the lower court level, or you go back to the prosecutor and the defense attorney, and you work it out at your level. You're not going to kick this up.
No, ultimately it should be fixed at the legislature. That's where it should ultimately be fixed. And they had an opportunity this past spring. By God, people like Eric Johnson completely hamstrung that.
Then he still kicked it to the right place.
Well, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that. I can understand Thurman Baker's argument to a certain degree. But you know what? Here's the problem with that. Is maybe Thurman Baker's right. Maybe the trial judge in Douglas County that denied bond is right. But to have this boy tied up in this legal arcana that's just looking more and more like a screw job, I mean, it is everybody has a black eye at this point on this. And the legal profession especially, and like you said, Decatur guy, you know, maybe Thurman Baker takes a pass on this one. Every prosecutor makes what they want to prosecute. And
he had the ability to end this entire situation by just not appealing. And it would have put the whole issue to rest, I think. Maybe it would have hurt him politically with conservative white voters, and he might not have gotten glowing reviews from Jim Wooten and the AJC this week. But, you know, I have a feeling deep down inside, after watching Thurman Baker for 12 years, that that's what he's trying to do. He's looking at the next election with this. And that's where he's going.
Everybody's playing politics with this, and meanwhile a 19-year-old kid sits in jail.
Yeah,
and frankly, I'm disgusted.
That's the disgusting part.
I guess the one lesson is, as we all should know, regardless of our age, whatever you do, make sure that you don't call yourself to the attention of the criminal justice system.
I do think it's interesting.
Can't go wrong with that, Steve.
I try that every day of my life.
One other thing I want to talk about today is just the fact that the Democrats have lost yet another member of their delegation to the House.
Mike, you got lucky that this happened in the last show. Nobody's listening.
Yeah. You will, though.
We're going to Mike Jacobs now.
Oh, good. Here's where Randy and I will agree.
Mike Jacobs left the Democratic Party, moved to the Republican Party. Said the Democrats are impossible to work with, wouldn't work with him on his special take on certain issues. And, Catherine, I just want to hear some of your thoughts.
I think he's going to be, I think he becomes much less attractive to the Republicans when he's a Republican. I think he's much more attractive as a Democrat who votes with them than he is once he's a Republican. And it wouldn't surprise me if someone who's just a little further to the right than him in the Republican Party runs against him in a primary. The only way that won't happen is if he gets protection from his neighboring legislators. I'm very disappointed. I considered Mike a friend, and I supported him even though he's very far away from my district. And I was very disappointed. And I've been disappointed with him for about most of the last two sessions, so it's not a big surprise. But I think he's gonna find that grass that he thought was gonna be greener is not so green.
I think the Democrats, in a sense, have really done a good job on this because when the switch occurred in Florida, went from a Democratic institution in the House and the Senate for the last 130 some years, and the Republicans took control, there were 30 switches. I mean, it was a massive switchover. That hasn't occurred here in Georgia, and I think that's a little bit of a tribute to the Democrats that they held as many as they did. But this has gone on since the beginning of time. One of my favorite historical folks, of course, is Winston Churchill, who was a Tory. He switched, became Labor, and then at the end of his career, he switched back. And when somebody asked him about it in the media, he said, anybody can rap, but it takes real talent to re-rap. So we haven't seen that yet here, but if the Democrats were to take control of both bodies, you'd see a lot of re-ratting going on.
I'm disappointed as well. I agree with Kevin. the other hand, it's not the worst thing in the world to have another moderate Republican in the caucus. And I'm not saying I'm going to support Mike if he runs for re-election, but I just need to see who the candidates are going to be. I mean, if he continues to vote the right way on choice issues and gay rights issues, you know, it's going to be a tough choice for a lot of people. But, you know, to have him in the Republican caucus is not necessarily the worst thing in the world if it has the influence of one more moderate Republican having a little bit more influence in the caucus.
Well, I think that might be a big if.
Can the D's win that district?
Yes. John Kerry won the district and Al Gore won the district. Mike's in a lot of trouble politically, not only, as Catherine mentioned, from the right in a primary, but it's certainly going to be a very competitive district. On the other hand, Jill Chambers is even in a more Democratic district than Mike Jacobs' district, and she continues to win with the ever-increasing numbers. So, you know, maybe Mike takes advice from Jill and everything works out for him, but, you know, at least this next year, it's going to be a very, very competitive race.
Well, it's anytime somebody switches, particularly in a sort of inside the perimeter district like this, I mean, they're going to be But if I remember right, he won last time 65-35-15 over majority.
There was no
real opposition. But still, to make up 15 points, I think it's possible. But the Democrats are going to need the depth touch of the jeweler, and we'll see about that.
I mean, one thing about that district is Casey Cagle lost that district. Jim Martin won that district.
Right.
But yet, Sonny Perdue won.
It's
a weird district.
People don't vote necessarily down strict partisan lines.
But I do think that it's that they won't be. They aren't happy. Any Democrats there who voted for Mike, who are diehard Democrats, aren't happy. And people who voted for maybe Republicans who said, "Oh, okay, I'll vote for this guy. He's a Democrat," and then he rats on him. I mean, I think that it's a big disappointment to voters too. And Decatur guy and I talked about this. And I thought you made a good point that he should have just, how did you put it? He should have resigned.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why everybody's so upset is because he did go about this very poorly. He let this thing linger for 6 to 9 months, denied it to some people, admitted it to other people.
His
calculations are just so out there and so obvious that it upsets a lot of people. I think the honorable thing would have been the Phil Graham plan, who was a congressman from Texas who used to be a Democrat. When he wanted to switch to the Republicans because he found the Democrats to be no longer ideologically aligned, he resigned his seat and then ran in a special election as a Republican. And I think for Mike, that would have been the proper thing to do in this situation.
And he probably would have won.
He might have.
Because I think people like him.
As did Graham.
Yeah.
But I think it's, we feel betrayed. I think people feel betrayed when they switch like that, especially because he wasn't taking calls from his Democratic friends. He was, denying the rumors. It wasn't handled well.
Well, we're about at the end of this half hour, and I want to thank everyone for being a part of this panel. Let's go around the semicircle with the final thoughts. Crypto, I'll start with you.
I'll just finish with something I said earlier. You know, I give credit to the people of Georgia to be able to figure out a true story. And the legislature had a chance to fix a grave injustice this past spring, and they didn't. And the people that didn't, I hope they pay the price.
I'm getting excited about presidential politics finally, which is very hard to do. But it's heating up now between now and the next week. Fred Thompson will probably jump into the race. That will change all of the dynamics on the Republican side. Still looking at a fascinating race on the Democratic side. Female Hillary against African-American Obama. It's going to be a very exciting race on the Democratic side. And I think everybody's going to start focusing on it now over the next 30 to 45 days because that season comes so early now in February. This race is going to be decided by the end of March.
Just to follow with Randy, it's funny because Hillary and Obama, and then you've got Edwards sort of on the sidelines. But is Obama the white candidate and Hillary is the black candidate? I mean, it's confusing because
it's got great dynamics.
It really is, and it should be interesting. I don't know who I'm going to vote for, but I look forward to watching it.
Well, I'm also, of course, interested in the presidential campaigns, and I just have one suggestion for everyone who's listening and everyone here. When you're contemplating who you think you might want to support for president, just imagine each of them across the table from Vladimir Putin and decide who you think would be able to handle that conversation.
That's good.
Are you supporting Fred Thompson?
Well, I'm not supporting anyone, actually, right
now. Well, you saw him in the Hunt for Red October.
And with that, thank you for listening. Hope you have a great July. We'll be back at you soon with the Georgia Politics Podcast.